Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Good book. Really, really good book. Really, really important book, I think.
Wait, where are you?
A lot of it?
I don't see you.
I'm a ninja.
You're not. Yeah. Did you turn on an invisible cloak? Oh, there you are.
Briefly. I was making some more invisible cloak coffee. Yeah.
Oh.
So this
you
book,
need a minute
this
to make it?
Super, no, no, it's good. It's making itself.
Okay.
So this book is super good. The Tactical Guide to Women by Sean T. Smith. How many of your guys you think have read it? Has it been commonly widespread used?
I first heard about it, I believe, through the 21 convention. I've been a speaker there multiple times, and I believe Sean was also a speaker there. And I think that's where I first heard about it. Right. And that was a few years back. So I read it, I believe, in 2018 and thought it was great. I was coming out of a pretty tough relationship. I've had a gazillion tough relationships, but it helped me make a lot of sense of quite a few of them. And then I've always recommended it to people. And when you told me you got a lot out of it too, I figured, yeah, we should definitely talk about it. There's some really good points in there. So for everyone listening or watching, you know, he says in the book, making the wrong choice and marrying the wrong woman is a mistake that can cost you everything. And it's just one mistake, but it can literally cost you your money, your happiness, your health, right? Like, and
can ruin your life. I mean, guys
yeah.
kill themselves from divorces like all the time. I mean, the mm-hmm. whole murder suicide thing is real. Like, it's fucked up, but it's, yeah, you marry the wrong woman and it can destroy your life, especially given, you know, for us guys here in the States, the family court system and really just the plain old legal system with the cops is profoundly stacked against you as a guy. I mean, if you're not scared, you're not paying attention as to just how much jeopardy you are in terms of going to jail, getting an assault. I mean, it's so easy for a guy to end up in the paper, even having done nothing wrong. It's insane. And this certainly bears examination because, yeah, I think you guys owe it to yourselves to keep your asses out of jail, out of the paper, out of the court system, and from being ruined. Cause I mean, what Tomasi calls it is getting zeroed out. That's when guys kill themselves, is they get zeroed out by the system and by women.
I was recently in a pretty toxic relationship. The longer I'm out of it, the more I see how toxic it was.
Tell the listeners, give them a summary of how you realized what traits she had. They're like, oh, that was messed up. Now that I can look at it with some clarity.
Yeah. I mean, well, one thing was, I mean, the relationship started off from her being, very kind of codependent and anxiously attached to me being avoidant and more on like the narcissistic side. So one thing that is pretty interesting, like if you look at how narcissism and codependency plays out, it's typically you have one partner who's maybe more invested emotionally than the other, right? So the person who's less invested emotionally is typically more avoidant, and they have less interest, they don't care as much, so they come off as more narcissistic. And then the other person who's more invested, who's trying to make it work, who's kind of putting in all that work, that person tends to play the role of codependent.
Ukrainian internet rules. If you haven't been to Ukraine, the whole infrastructure is like this. It just occasionally stops working. So yeah, Robbie is frozen in time for the minute. I'm the host now. Robbie must have picked up some party girls in Odessa and disappeared. That's what usually happens. goes that way pretty quickly. So anyway, this book is really a risk avoidance book and should be used as a template to mitigate your risk in a dangerous world, particularly, like I said, in our country. And the cool thing about it that I really like is Sean Smith doesn't vilify women and say that women are all the problem. Really, you're as much of the problem potentially as any woman is. And important to note is where you came from, your core beliefs, the things that are formed early in life that determine who you are. Things like I'm not worthy, I'm ugly, I'm not that smart, I don't deserve love, I have to buy or earn love through tasks or gifts. Bad choices in women come from our evolutionary biology frequently. Our brains are actually wired to solve short-term problems like horny, tired, hungry, right? Those are typically pretty quick fixes. You're horny, you get some, you're hungry, you eat something, you're tired, you take a nap. But our brains are odds-laying machines to reduce or eliminate uncertainty. And the core beliefs that we have, especially if they're faulty core beliefs, can really help us attract the wrong people into our lives and get us what we don't want, or really what we want the least or what we need the least, and help keep those people around. If you think about simple things like a smoke detector isn't great at specificity, kind of like our core beliefs are not. So a lot of this stuff was taught to us by our dads, whether we know it or not. A lot of the bad habits that we learned came from our dads, who I don't know a guy who has a dad who had really a good tool set to teach them how to negotiate courtship, how to make good choices in women, how to be a man. I mean, like maybe how to be a man in terms of how to fix stuff or how to not be a pussy, that kind of be a man stuff, but how to be a man in terms of relative to a woman. And we frequently just return to what we know. It's kind of like the analogy of the horse to the barn. You think about a horse that lives in a barn. The horse goes outside the barn, and when the horse needs shelter, it goes to the barn for safety. But the horse is outside and the lightning storm kicks up and the barn starts on fire. The horse still runs back into the barn because the barn is what it knows. So it's not the right move, but we get wired in that horse to the barn way. What we frequently look for is first attractiveness in women. And then secondarily, is she a good fit for me? And what we really should look for first, according to Sean Smith, of course, right? Smart guy. I suggest you watch his stuff. Oh, Robbie's coming back. Maybe. What you should look for is she a good fit first? And two, is she attractive in a sea of candidates? I just have kept talking because you've clearly been gone. So I wanted to keep some sort of stream of consciousness tracking with the book going. So anyway, when you were sort of gone in the ether, I started kind of down the road about what I like about this book is the fact that Sean Smith doesn't vilify women. He actually says the first thing you got to do is you have to know who you are, where you're coming from, understand your core beliefs, right? The things that form your decision-making process. Core beliefs oftentimes being not good, you know, things like I'm inadequate, I'm not good looking, I'm not smart, I'm not worthy of love, stuff like that. And it actually can attract the wrong people into your life. So I really like the accountability aspect. And I really think that you could call this book a tactical guide to men also. I mean, I think you could just switch the words and apply any of these principles to either sex. Doesn't matter, because much of it is simply mental health and sort of functional problem solving. and mm-hmm. an emotional maturity, right? I mean, I think it's these are themes that keep coming up in terms of how do you, hey, everything's easy when you're getting along great and you're in the sort of romance phase and you got those love chemicals flowing. But, you know, the real person comes out after a year, 18 months, and then you start to see really what you're in for when you start to recognize those little idiosyncrasies or flaws that the person had that you found amusing, you no longer find amusing. Now you start to see. So
right.
One of the things also in this book that, you know, these books are often like sort of they go back between other books. He talks about the avoiding the nice guy problem. And I think most of us have read No More Mr. Nice Guy by Robert Glover. Which is just such a huge one. And it's getting more and more bad in terms of the way that they're educating guys. And I mean, they're educating young men to not be men anymore. A while back, there was this sort of, I think it was a joke, but there was this like slideshow thing. I think it was in the New Yorker about the 10 slides of the modern non-toxic male. And it's disturbing and it's fucking funny at the same time, but you got to take it as a serious sign of the times. Like the first slide is this just fruity looking effete theater professor looking guy with an eco-friendly tote bag that's got the support of gay marriage and reading books on it. Like the kind of guy that no girl, even the most Nazi blue hair feminist, would never have sex with. Like it's just
right.
It's just such craziness. And one of the traits that, you know, there's five big personality traits again. Like Jordan Peterson talks about there's personality traits: agreeableness, openness, extroversion, conscientiousness, and neuroticism. And one of the worst ones to have if you want to attract women is agreeableness, right? Yeah. Because agreeableness is a huge attraction killer, and it's thought that it's a huge attraction killer in terms of an evolutionary viewpoint, because a man that's hyper agreeable may be more likely to get taken advantage of by other men, therefore not be a good provider or protector. And so again, I mean, you know, you guys, we have to go against this grain of being these pussy, flaccid, nice guys that are hyper agreeable and white knighty, because anybody who's in this group knows that shit doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, that was my childhood.
Me too.
Yeah. And if I saw my dad disagree with my mom, it would just, you know, it was just like, that didn't work. So he just became more agreeable. And I was like, oh, that seems like a good idea. Arguing with her doesn't really help. Might as well just say yes. And that left me with not a lot of options until I was like in my, you know, early mid-20s when I realized, oh, I have to stop being a pussy nice guy.
Well, my father's hard. My dad's, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, even though I've gone through the process of, you know, removing the nice guy shit, like, it still comes back. You know, that shit is so deeply ingrained. It's like, yeah, you're always kind of keeping it at bay. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, I have to ask myself, like, I say multiple times per interaction with when I'm hanging out with my girlfriend, am I being too nice? Do I need to inject a little dick?
Right.
And I don't mean literal dick. I mean dickiness. Yeah. I mean, I was listening to a Rollo Tomasi podcast, and I take this for what it's worth, but I think it's at least funny and maybe useful. Is he says, every now and then, maybe like once a month or so, because Rollo Tomasi is, if you look at, he's written this book, The Rational Male, and these other books, pretty much for single men, but it also applies to married and men in relationships. Rollo Tomasi has been married to the same woman for like 25 years, right? Like, he's not out there playing it up. Any of his exploits he talks about happened in the fucking 80s, basically, when he was in rock bands and shit, right? Or the 90s.
I didn't even know that. So I figured he was single.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, fuck no. He's proudly married for 24, 25 years. But what he says he does, which is really interesting, is he says about once a month, give or take, I'll just say no to my wife, just to say no. And I know that she's going to get mad at me. She's going to do whatever. She's like, not talk to me for a day or sulk or whatever. It doesn't matter. But I purposely, just to keep her off balance and to not be too much of a nice guy and just to maintain the frame, what she talks about, I'll say no. Whether it's like this one time she wanted to buy this new bed for their daughter. And he's like, no, just no. So that would be interesting to play with. I mean, look, my father is 76 years old. He's been with the same woman for like 25 years. Before that, he was married to my mother. And he's handled both relationships exactly the same way. Passive-aggressive, volatile, sullen, nice guy who doesn't put his foot down and hold the line on boundaries. He'll take it. If he tries to do anything that goes against what's acceptable to his woman, she'll sulk and pout and do whatever punishment stuff she'll do. He just wants to be avoidant. Why does my dad like hunting and fishing? Because he wants to get out of the house. That's it. He wants to get away from this fucking horrible relationship that he's created.
Right.
But so my point is that most of us come from these deeply ingrained pathologic behavioral relational patterns that are super destructive, and we've got to continually work to to unlearn.
Yeah. So after he discusses, you know, just the understanding your own psychology, I think that's kind of earlier on, right? He asks the readers to kind of take a look at themselves first, obviously, because if you're, and then he makes the example of that guy who's just a total pushover nice guy, and the girl who's just like a battle axe cracking the whip, and he explains the example of their relationship and how that went awry. That's the point where I think after that maybe he goes into the light triad and the dark triad. But is there anything else that from that early section that I missed?
Well, he talks about avoiding value traps.
Oh, okay.
Meaning like, right, like avoiding, we avoid value traps. We use value traps to avoid unpleasant feelings and pursue secondary awards like admiration, money, status, security, right? Meaning impure motivations for doing things and keeping up with like societal pressures like, oh, you got to have a nice car. And you're not really doing it for you. You're doing it because it's just a trap. I think we both know a nice car doesn't get you laid. People don't, you know, it's just an indicator of your capacity to earn, if anything. I mean, I drive shittier cars than I've ever driven in my life. I've had the nice cars, and now I'm just like, my favorite vehicle is a 20-year-old truck, and I don't give two shits. I love it.
Right. Yeah.
I got three kind of ragtag vehicles, and I go with the one that's the oldest one, because I can pull shit and put dirt bikes in it. So
looks like you got a lot of dirt bikes to put in it, considering you have them in your living
room. I got one behind me. There's one right outside that door, about 6 feet away. Yeah.
So what's a value trap?
You gotta just a trap that you fall into by pursuing things that are not really a pure motivation in terms of
like nice cars.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you mentioned the bright triad, which is pretty multifaceted and leads into some important, there's nine critical questions that are asked that you have to assess a woman using. But the bright triad is clarity, maturity, and stability. And clarity is like the skills for managing difficulty, tough times, hurt feelings. And then, but within clarity, there's these three sort of pillars that make it up. Like there's reliability of communication skills, right? Their ability to reliably communicate what they need, what they want from you. And there's inquisitiveness, which is exploring the other person's view and motive and driver. Like they're curious, like, why did you do that? Or why do you feel this way? And then assertiveness, right? Speaking up, not being passive aggressive, right? We've all probably had those girlfriends that you go, seems like something's wrong. What's wrong? Nothing. Right. It's like, something's wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to tell me what's wrong? You should just know. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, but as far as emotional maturity, we've talked to you and I mentioned that, like with your past girlfriend and a lack of emotional maturity, there's sort of five non-negotiables. Again, I don't want to get too in the weeds with lists and stuff, but they are pretty important. Five non-negotiables for this emotional maturity is things like insight, intellectual nuance, right? Not living in a black and white world. Resilience, right? So what's resilience? Resilience is, it's a couple things, but one of them is getting bent under pressure, under load, and coming back stronger, right? Like, or just the ability to roll with the punches. Like example, you take your girlfriend to her favorite restaurant, you get there and it's closed, right? How does she handle that, right? She melt down and everything's ruined and fuck and or does she roll with the punches and just say, okay, we'll just go somewhere else, right?
Right.
Internalization is another one, and self-maintenance, right? So kind of self-explanatory. Does she do the things to, you know, does she work out? Does she meditate? Does she do the things to maintain her mental and corporeal self?
What was the fourth one? Internalization?
Internalization. So I'll go into that in a little bit, but basically what that leads into is internalization of responsibility. So I'll give you an example. I actually, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, I was with my girlfriend, her brother and their family was visiting. She said, hey, can we take my brother and the family out on your boat? I want to show them a good time. I was like, yeah, awesome. I'll take this. We'll all go to this awesome, historic, beautiful spot. I'll give them a tour, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be great. So we go, we're at this busy boat launch and we're launching the boat. And I'm trying to basically herd cats, right? People that don't know mechanical stuff, don't know boats, don't understand boat launches, nothing. But there's this stressful boat launch with all these guys in a line. And you know, at these boat launches, you want to like back in, get the boat off, move the truck, get the fuck out of the way, right? So I'm in the water, like up to my thighs, getting the boat off rolling the boat off the trailer. And I say to her brother, who's on the dock, I said, get on the dock, hold the boat, and then move the boat down the dock to get it out of the way. Well, he held the boat all right, but he doesn't know shit about boats. And it's my own fault, right? He grabs the back of the boat. So the front of the boat swings out and it's going to smash into somebody else's boat. So I'm like, I'm running through the water in between the trailer. I run into my own trailer with my leg, fall in the water, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. Grab the boat. I get up out of the water. I have a huge gash in my leg, like 6-inch gash, a couple inches wide, couple inches deep. It's fucking ugly. And I'm like, shit, I was pissed. I was mostly pissed at myself because I didn't lead well. So what happened? I got a gushing, pouring blood out of my leg. I got to load the boat back on the trailer, get it out of the way. I take a towel, wrap it around my leg, tape it up. And because my girlfriend's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I got to go get medical attention. This isn't like a small thing. This is, I can see my tibialis anterior muscle and my tibia, like really ugly. So my point of this long story is that my girlfriend was really, she thought, oh my God, he's going to be so mad at me. And But at the end of the day, I thought she thinks I'm crazy, but I said, hey, I think this was a positive thing that this happened for our relationship, because you got to see shitty things happen. You got to see how I reacted to it. I didn't blame her, right? I was mad at myself. I didn't blame her, didn't blame her brother. She felt super bad because I was injured. I mean, they wouldn't even treat me at an urgent care because it was too big of a gaping hole. They said, you got to go to see the ER doctor. And they put two layers of, like, sewed the muscle back together, sewed the shin back together. But my point is that that could have gone a really different way, right? I was somebody who didn't internalize responsibility, I could have been like, well, he fucked up because he didn't hold the boat right. And I yelled at her to grab the boat and she didn't grab the boat and blah, blah, blah. But that's a big deal because shit happens. Bad things happen.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's how you handle it, right? So.
Totally. Yeah. That sounds fucking painful, too. But, well,
I just got, I don't know if you can see this. Hard to see in this light.
Wow. Yeah.
Just got the stitches out the other day.
Wow.
And it looks amazing compared to how it looked. But whatever.
Yeah, it's like this long, no joke.
Yeah. But that's the other thing too, is that, you know, the bar is set so fucking low for being a man, it's easy to make yourself look good in just being like what would be expected of a man 30 years ago, right? Like,
yeah.
She was just flabbergasted that I didn't melt into a puddle of tears and cry and feel sorry for myself when it happened. And I hooked the boat back up, took it back to my house, backed it in, got my, she's like, wow, my brother would have never done that. I guess he's a fucking pussy. Like, what else are you going to do? Right.
Right.
So for us guys out there, man, just, if you can just be like that much more masculine and just not be a bitch, like, you immediately elevate yourself in a world of bitches, because that's what they're telling guys that they should be, as bitches.
The bar is very, very low.
Low.
Ridiculously low.
Super low. Super easy to stand out as not being a pussy. So anyway, let's move on.
Yeah.
Like, so 9 critical risk management questions, because really that's what this stuff is about. This is just risk management. As we talked about, you can ruin your life if you don't manage these risks well. So within the clarity chunk is, the question is, are her coping skills reliable? Meaning, do her coping skills go away or do they stay during the tough times? And if she's upset, is she okay to back off and think about it and cool off, right? That's a big one. 2, is she inquisitive, right? Does she want to understand you? And like, we've all, again, probably had this. You ever had a girlfriend who assigned meaning to your words? Like, you said this, but when you said this, you meant that. Like, oh, shit. That's crazy talk. And that's a deal breaker. 3 of the clarity pillar, is she assertive, right? Is she forthright about what she wants to get or achieve? Is she clear about what she wants from you? And we have to make sure that she's not passive aggressive or manipulative, right? Just straightforward. Sometimes that's called kind of a tall order. That's not a real common thing. And we get to the sort of next pillar of emotional maturity. In the emotional maturity one is, 1, is she resilient? Does she fall apart when things go wrong, right? Like, she loses her ID, or that favorite restaurant is closed, or how does she handle that? 2, is she accepting, right? Is she accepting of your differences? She loves techno, you love rock, whatever, who cares, right? But how does that go? Or do you have to be in lockstep with her? And then 3, is she good to you, right? And I would put this back on all the guys too and say, are you good to her, right? Are you accepting of her differences? Are you resilient when shit goes wrong? Or are you an asshole about it, right? But is she good to you? Does she do acts of kindness? Does she do acts of respect? Is she forgiving of your flaws and your faults? Because we all have them. I mean, except you, of course, you're perfect, but besides that.
Yeah, except me. Well, the rest of you guys are fucked, but I'm, you know, I'm good.
Yeah. That's why you're the leader, right? Right. So, and then there's the third sort of bright part of the bright triad is stability. Does she understand her history, right? Where she came from? Reminds me of the story. I had a young lady that worked for me who, she worked for me from, she was 19 to 21. She was a really pretty young gal, but her mother was a raging alcoholic. And what I found with this girl was that she was very manipulative. She was very charming when it suited her. She would just use people. There'd be all these guys coming in and out of her life that she would sort of dangle the pussy carrot in front of their nose. She was never going to fuck them, but she would use them for whatever she'd get them. And really importantly, she had no boundaries because her mother, she was raised by a mother who is a terrible alcoholic. Children of alcoholic are known to not have boundaries because the person that raised them, the alcoholic, alcoholics don't have boundaries, right? So she would do some things that were just stunningly hard to like fathom in a professional setting that I had to pull her aside and say, this is a real boundary transgression. Like this is, and the fact that this doesn't even register to you. So long story short, I had a talk with her when she was on her way out. I said, here's the deal. Well, it actually came to light that she was shoplifting when she worked for me. She was probably stealing from me, but I had a talk with her on the way out and she clearly didn't understand her own history and her motivations, right? And the talk that we had was, I was like, hey, you got some real boundary issues that are gonna fuck your life up, right? She wanted me to give her a letter of recommendation. I was like, you should consider going to Al-Anon. Al-Anon is the support group for children of alcoholics who learn about the pathological stuff they learn from their alcoholic parents. So my point of this is in this, she was completely unaware of her history, so she was unable to correct her actions.
Gotcha.
On to another one. Number two, did that make sense or was that completely rambling?
No, that was good. Very good. One sec, I'm going to lose power, so I just need to move. Where to best do this? You want to come to Ukraine and bring me a laptop?
Bring you a laptop? Is your laptop messed up?
It's fucked up, and it's so hard to find them here. Pay like double price. My battery lasts like 30 minutes. Same
bottle. Gotcha.
All right.
I don't know what the travel. I don't know what the travel stuff is even like.
You can come. But anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So on to part number two of the stability.
Or just to reflect aspect. Just to reflect a little. I think there's so many. Mentally, and
what's that? You
so like, you know, thing. Maybe get some therapy, figure that shit out. Oh,
you kind of cut out there. Can you? You were really in and out there. I couldn't understand. All I heard was therapy. Figure some stuff out.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just saying it's really important that you do the work to figure out your own shit. See a therapist, you know, whatever you have to do to get a better grasp of what's going on internally with you. Because if you're just fucking running around thinking everything's not your fault or thinking you're perfect,
Absolutely. I mean, no question about it. And one thing I've always admired about your problem solving ability is that I've actually learned quite a bit from, even though I've never mentioned it, is your ability to keep your world small. And what I mean by that is not, is if there's a problem, you don't say, well, this happened and then that happened and that happened and it stacks on top and therefore that. You just go, okay, I'm gonna keep my world small and there's this one thing, I'm gonna dissect this thing out and then solve it and then move to the next thing. So that's, I think that's a really good thing. Cause I think a lot of times people like myself, for example, would be like, well, this happened and that happened, that happened, and then sort of conglomerate them all into one ball of happened. And then therefore, it's fucking illogical and it's dumb, but it's stuff that we sometimes learn. So that's part of the process, right? Is to unlearn your pathology. You know, along with one of these, number two beyond this, does she understand her history, is you and I have talked about this with a girlfriend or 2 years, is she addicted, right? She have a drinking problem, she have a drug problem. It goes beyond more than she's going to disappear for days at a time and she spends a bunch of money on blow or whatever. People that have addiction problems, addiction, if you read about it, is really, really linked to high levels of shame and experiential avoidance. People that are addicted are trying to avoid feeling the pain of the things that they haven't dealt with. So you get into these big layers of, like, you can't, I mean, I'm sure you've been down this road, right? If somebody's got an addictive issue, they're just kind of fucked in the relationship. Like, you can't help people with that. They gotta work through that, because it's way more than I drink too much vodka or I snort too, or I take too much MDMA or whatever, you know?
For sure.
Number three is, does she internalize responsibility? Right, kind of like we talked about the boat story. Are you likely to internalize or externalize responsibility? People that externalize responsibility, they just don't have as good of an outlook on life. They have more anxiety. They've decreased life satisfaction. They give up more easy. They have lower success, and they have a decreased ability to weather the challenges of life. Probably because they feel powerless, and they blame external things for their lack of results or their bad results, right? So big time one. Anything to add to that?
Very straightforward. I think, you're fucked if you're with someone like that.
Totally fucked. All right, now on to avoiding, kind of just to tie it up here, avoiding common mistakes and blunders. I mean, this is not really in any particular order, but what I would say, like, to any guy in the U.S., you're insane if you consider marrying a girl without a prenuptial agreement. The court system is so stacked against you. It's quantifiably stacked against men. I'm going to be wrong on the stats, but overwhelmingly, women get alimony from guys. Overwhelmingly, women get custody of children if there are any. And there's even lots of cases of guys that marry women that have children by other men, and then these guys get divorced from them, and then somehow they get on the hook to pay child support for a kid that they didn't fucking father, which is just blows the mind. But it's a fucked up system. And, you know, some lawyers and some different municipalities handle prenuptial agreements differently. Even different judges may handle it differently, but it's better to have one than not to have one, because you're going to lose your shit if you don't have one as a guy. And the person that stands to gain going into a marriage without a prenup is the person that goes into the marriage with less, right? So if you marry a woman who's a billionaire, hey, don't get a prenup, right? I mean, sure then, but if she's a billionaire, she's not stupid, and she's gonna be like, we're getting a prenup. Be like, all right.
Yeah.
There was a documentary, I think it was called Divorce Inc. or something like that, that was really eye-opening, that sort of unpacked the American divorce system and how it's really just set up to drain both parties of money. Like when you go to a divorce attorney, I mean, once one person gets a divorce attorney, the other person gets a divorce attorney because you have to. And literally you go to a divorce attorney and the first thing you do is you fill out a balance sheet, all your bank accounts, all your assets. Why? Because they're going to drain you of it all. It literally happens every day, all day. Attorneys literally fucking drain people. They know exactly what you have and they know exactly how much they can get you to fight. So that, wow, you don't want that bitch to get your motorcycle. We got to fight for this at $300 an hour, right? So, yeah, you're,
that's great.
Long story short. And, you know, and I think the mistake that I've seen the guys make, well, here's what I've heard. Usually it's guys who want to get the prenup, and guys are doing a prenup from a risk management standpoint. Because if you don't have a prenup, you're not only trusting the woman, of course, you've got to have a level of trust to consider freaking legally tying yourself to a person until you break that contract, possibly for life. But you're also relying on a system. You're also placing your trust in a system, the divorce system, the family court system, that is against you. So you have to trust two parties. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't want the government involved in my life any more than it's got to be. So, but as far as having that conversation, the earlier the better, right? And what I've seen, like my buddy, one of my best friends, who's going to lose his ass when he gets divorced. My friend is a specialized accountant. He makes a truckload of money. This fucker makes a lot of money. Like in the last 5 years, and I'm just like, holy shit, this guy is insanely successful. Well, he married this woman that he'd been with for 5 years, single mom, right? Took on the kid of his own. Now he's got two kids with her that are his kids. But he kept lying to me and his other friends and saying, oh, we're going to sign a prenup. We're going to sign a prenup. Wedding day happens. I was in his wedding. Oh, she's going to sign a prenup today. Wedding happens. Oh, she's going to sign it. He lied to us. He doesn't have a fucking prenup. And he's an idiot because she is one of these gals who loves to spend his money. He likes to spend his money. And when the wheels come off that one, it's going to cost him. And it's all because he was too much of a pussy to be like, look, here's the deal. Prenup or no marriage. Super simple, right? I mean, because the thing that was getting thrown back in his face is, well, so what? You want me to sign a divorce contract because you don't think it's going to work, right? You don't trust me, right? There's all this personal right. character assault things. But, totally. I mean, you got to do it.
Yeah, like if that's why most guys won't sign a prenup, it's just because they're pussies and they're like, oh, this girl's, you know, maybe if she won't say yes to the marriage if I make her sign a prenup and they don't stick to their guns, then they get completely fucked later. Completely fucked. So I'm sure you knew it was coming.
And that's just it. It's just like, I mean, do you really want to trust everything you've worked for in your life to a woman who won't marry you unless there's monetary gain in a system that stands to benefit her? You're fucking insane if you do that, right? I mean, right there, to me, that tells you everything you need to know about that woman, right? Yeah. I mean, all the guilt tricks that she might try to pull on you, she clearly is not marrying you for love and commitment. If when the money's taken off the table, she's out. Like,
yeah,
fuck that.
Like,
and yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. I'm not looking to get married, but I will say that this Ukrainian chick that I'm dating, she earned some real points with me. And maybe it's bullshit, I don't know, but it seemed authentic. She said to me, you know, it's crazy in your country. I don't know why anybody would get married without the prenuptial agreement. I would never get married without a prenuptial agreement. I'm thinking, fucking music to my ears, baby. Music to my ears. Now,
yeah.
That said, That said, if it ever comes to pass, as we all know, women reserve the right to change their mind at any time. But I can tell you, fuck, I mean, I'm old enough at this point. Like, there's no Cinderella spell to be put on me. If a girl would sign a prenup, I'd be like, peace out, Girl Scout.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the biggest red flag ever, right? She won't sign a prenup. It doesn't get any bigger than that. Like, clearly she's
right.
Anything she can say is manipulation, because it's like, either it works and I keep what I had before and you keep what you had before, and if it doesn't work, then, you know, we go our own ways. So it's anything else
it seems really reasonable.
Not agreeing to it.
Yeah, it seems really reasonable, but but anytime there's financial incentive, man, you're going to get that. So I couldn't agree more. It's non-negotiable, boys. If she won't sign the prenup, move the fuck on. She doesn't love you.
Yep.
Now, if there's a rich broad who wants to marry you and wants you to sign a prenup, then it's the shoe's on the other foot, right? I mean, honestly, if I met a woman that I was willing to sign a fucking contract with the government with, and she had $1 billion, I'd sign a prenup. I don't give a shit. Like, I make my own money, whatever, right? And if you marry somebody who's got more than you anyway, while you're married to them, you stand to benefit anyway. So whatever.
I believe in the U.S. system, you know, from the day you get married until the day you get divorced, you split everything 50-50 anyway. So if you're with someone who's, you know, if you're with a woman who's crushing cash, you're still going to benefit while you're with her, even if you do sign a prenup. Yeah.
Yeah. I would. I totally would. Of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And if you wouldn't, yeah, I mean, you just want her money anyway.
Yeah. All right, next point.
Okay, so important is to define and defend your values. So what does this mean? It means don't hide or apologize for your values. It's easy for guys in the short term to get laid, to not really say what they mean, to not really stand up for their values, but it's going to bite you in the ass later. So your brain's that short-term problem-solving machine. You can go that route, but it's not going to serve you well in the long term. Another important thing is, you know, if you're with somebody seriously, you got to include her in your activities and participate in her activities. You have to be clear about things that are non-negotiable, right? If you're a super religious guy, obviously that's a non-negotiable, and you want to communicate that up front so that there's no surprises or whatever your non-negotiables are. Look for signs of long-term value compatibility, right? I mean, people have to share values. Like, have you ever met anybody who's kind of a cheat, who thought it was okay to just sort of cheat in certain ways? Or I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like,
corner cutters,
just would be okay with,
yeah.
Yeah, or gaming the system in a dishonest way. Like, to me, that would be a deal breaker, right? I mean, you got to have basic values, right? Honest, kind, generous, hardworking. Pretty simple. If you don't have those, kick rocks. Speak honestly about where your values diverge, right? So people with differing values, as long as they're not moral deviations, can get along and be fine, as long as, again, you can work through them. Don't be a values thrill seeker, meaning, like, romantic comedies have given us all kinds of bad messages about where our values deviate, and that's fun and that's cute and blah, blah, blah. It's not. Like, if you have clashing values with somebody, you can't possibly have a good long-term relationship with them at all, or even probably a very good short-term relationship, right? Depending on the depth of your relationship. I mean, if you just have a girl who's, you're just friends with benefits, whatever, who cares what she thinks, that's fine. Discuss issues about money is very, very important. It's a big one. I mean, one of the some of the biggest I think the biggest cause of people breaking up slash divorcing is money, right? I mean, and the people that I've seen that are really successful in long-term marriages and relationships keep their money separate. Like they agree on sort of whatever the division of bills is. But then like a buddy of mine, he's like, he was going to buy a new dirt bike. And I was like, oh, don't you have to clear it with the missus? Sort of giving him shit. He's like, no. He's like, I have my own money. I buy whatever the fuck I want to buy. She's got her own money. She buys what she wants to buy. We don't even talk about it. It's like, now that makes a lot of sense. That's a great way to go. Right? Because, I mean, that's I just can't imagine.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I can't imagine asking permission to be like, honey, can I spend my money and buy myself a whatever? Like, that's crazy. But I mean, you see it all, the betaization of the planet. You see it all the time. I was in the airport and I saw this guy who's like probably 65. And we're going through customs. I was actually coming back from Ukraine. We're going through customs. And this guy's talking to the customs agent and his wife's behind him. And this old guy goes, oh, well, we got to check with the boss first. I just thought, oh, kill me now if that's ever me. Please, the boss. Okay. And then finally, it's super important to discuss the meaning of sex, right? How important is sex to each of you? What does it signify? I don't know. I'd love your opinion on this because I've had a fair bit of sex in my life. Compared to you, I've had about as much sex as the average eighth grader. So let's get you chiming in about this. It seems to me that for women in a relationship, sex is a demonstration of closeness, right? And a measure of how attractive you find her, right? If you don't want to fuck her, she thinks you don't find her hot or attractive. Would that be fair in your assessment?
That is certainly true. Yeah.
What I heard was that, you know, Ukrainian women are much more direct with sex and healthy about it. And there's a lot more manipulation in America. And I totally agree with you based on my own experiences. American women are definitely use sex as more of a tool.
Yeah.
I'm not certainly they all don't, but it seems really way different and it's fucked up, right? Cause that's a really messed up thing to use against somebody for power. It's a power thing.
Power struggle, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. In conclusion, I would say that, you better read this book if you want to date women, particularly in America. But really, women are women the world over. And, you know, I mean, fundamentally, whether in Ukraine or California, women have the same sort of wired biologic impulses, and hypergamy is hypergamy anywhere in the world, but and there's some cultural difference, but this stuff applies to all women, and healthy women are healthy women the world over.
Yeah.
So Sean Smith's great. He's got a whole bunch of YouTube stuff too on different things. Different topics. He's got a little kind of a podcast thing going, and he's super great guy. I mean, obviously, like, he sounds like he's a super level-headed guy. He's not anti anybody. He's not pro anybody. He's just like, here's the facts based on my experience as a clinician and seeing the mistakes that people make.
Yeah, that's how he seemed to me too after reading the book. Really like his stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to meet the guy.
Well, dude, thanks so much for going through all that. I mean, I agree completely. You just have to read the book. Like, and if you're in a relationship, read the book. If you're not in a relationship, read the book. Because
read the book.
Going into relationships, you're just asking for trouble. And guys just don't think about these things. It's fucking unbelievable how quickly guys will jump into a marriage or a relationship, like, without considering these things. And that's why you see such a high divorce rate and so many guys ending up in these horrible situations. So.
And, you know, to cap it off, one of the big things is time. That's one of the, I didn't mention that a big thing before getting crazy and marrying someone is give it time, because of the love chemicals that have an effect on you for 12 to 18 months, you don't see the things that you're going to see later. So you feel like you didn't marry the same person, and person that you got with in a year, your relationship's not going to be the same in 5 years or 10 years, right? Things are going to change. So yeah, give it plenty of time and let those things cool down. It's been really good for me to think more soberly about this relationship that I'm in, that's young and new and I'm pretty excited about, but it's sort of like dumped a bucket of water on some things being, oh, okay, all right, calm down.
Yeah, and that's a really healthy place to approach it from.
I agree, man. Well, let's talk soon. And thanks for having me on again. Super fun. Love your podcast. You usually have really interesting guests on. I don't include myself so much in that, but I definitely love to be part of the process.
No, man, you're great. I think this is the third one. So hopefully
at
more
least,
to come.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to do a future one. There's a book that I want to talk to you about. So it's great stuff.
All right, guys. Cool. Thanks for listening.
All right,
thanks,
buddy. Nick. Be well. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.